Hello, I'm Lisa O'Neill, and you're listening to The Matriarchitects. The Matriarchitects podcast and platform highlights changemakers who are building a culture that respects, values, and celebrates women. These individuals and their stories offer an antidote to the hard times we live in, showing us that new ways of seeing and being are not only possible, but are already here. Thanks for joining us. Let's build together. Today, I'm so excited to share with you an interview with Jade Beal. Jade is a Tucson-based photographer who uses her work to expand our understanding of what is beautiful. We talked about perceptions of women's bodies, mothers' bodies, and elders' bodies, the ways that she thinks about language, about bodies, and how she raises her son, and the transformational and healing power of photography.
So, Jade, I'm really excited to be talking with you today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm wondering if we could begin with you talking a little bit about how you got into photography.
I got into it in 1996 at Tucson High School with Jerry Halfman. He's a beloved teacher of a lot of ours. And I fell in love with the darkroom, first of all, but then photographing my friend's skin. From the very get-go, I was fascinated with uninterrupted skin. And my friends and I did lots of nudes and explored our bodies with photography and black and whites and developing them. And I was hooked from the start. I wanted to do it forever. And I didn't think I could make it as a photographer, photographing nudes. So I kind of put that on the back burner and became a body worker instead.
So you were a body worker and doing other things like teaching dance. And then can you explain like your return to photography? I know one of your images, not long after giving birth to your son, was a pretty, was a moment, right? It was this moment that it went into the world and people really responded to it. And I'm wondering if you could maybe just talk a little bit about the impulse and the composition of that photograph and then how that began to shift things for you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I continued photography when I went to massage school and then did body work for 15 years. I always did it on the side. And so I never stopped, but I just wasn't convinced I could make a living at it. But slowly I started blogging once the internet started going, Facebook, and sharing my vulnerabilities, sharing images of women that I had photographed, and building a portfolio and got a website and doing all these things that just for myself, didn't really think it would be a career. And I remember right before, about maybe a year before I got pregnant, someone said that they really liked my work, but that all my blogs and my photos on my website were the normal body type. The single body type, the single story of a thin white woman, and that's all they really saw on my website. And it really struck me. I hadn't actually thought about that. I was just following the norm. I was just following what we all been brainwashed to show. And so I looked for someone who would allow me to photograph them. No one would allow me to post photos if they weren't our quote-unquote typical body type. So then I got pregnant. And I took lots of self-portraits. I gained over 50 pounds. I gave birth. And I had this body that I was thrilled to be able to photograph that wasn't the quote-unquote single-story body type. And I photographed it. And I put it out to the world. And my life forever changed.
Mm-hmm. And when you did that, when you made that decision to publish that photograph, did you do that on Facebook or Facebook?
Yes, I did on Facebook, but I also wrote a blog about it.
Okay.
Back then I still had a blog.
Did you have any idea about the scope of audience that would end up reaching?
I had no idea of the scope. I was mainly doing it for selfish reasons because I wanted to add diversity, desperately wanted diversity on my website. And this was really the only way because I had been begging people. But until I stepped into it, it's almost as if then I gave credibility or permission or a whole bunch of things by owning it myself that other women felt compelled to say, hey, okay, I want to be a part of your body of work. I believe you. I believe that you're into this, that you see this as beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And so that really gave way into the Beautiful Body Project and the Bodies of Mothers. So maybe could you talk a little bit about those projects and the way that those came to be?
Absolutely. So after that photo, like hundreds of emails started pouring in, and it was a rush and overwhelming, and I had no idea. I've been struggling with body image issues since I can remember, and it was a big deal for me to put out this non, quote-unquote, flattering photo. Not Photoshopped. You can see my pimples and my dark circles and my, you know, post-birth body. All the stuff that I'd been hiding my entire life, trying to convince everyone that I didn't have, pretending to be someone I wasn't instead of just allowing myself to be. So women emailed, I started photographing, and it just kept, the spiral kept expanding. You know, soon people in India were emailing me with their body stories. And I just one day just came up with the Beautiful Body Project and realized that I should make a book of the bodies of mothers. I'd never seen like a collection of photos of all different arrays of mother bodies. I didn't even really know. All I knew was the bounce back story. After you give birth, you bounce back and you live happily ever after. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to share all these other stories. So I did a Kickstarter and I raised 3 times the amount I had asked for to do this book. I published the book. It was a labor of love. I had postpartum depression through it all. And it happened with the collaboration of hundreds of women willing, desiring, demanding to share their stories and images of their bodies.
You're talking a lot about the single story and a lot about one narrative and this narrative of like bouncing back after birth or the expectation around women's bodies and trying to get them back into this place that they were before. And I'm wondering what the impact of that is on mothers.
Well, first of all, this bounce back idea as if we want to be a sexier version of ourselves even before birth, because I've never identified as sexy. I've always struggled with weight, and I had this idea that I was going to be this super skinny, sexy mama. I don't know where that came from. Take that back. I do know where it came from. From all the magazines and every single piece of media and even my community unintentionally talking about how that's so important, how so-and-so lost all her baby weight and that was like the most prized thing of being a new mother. And so, yeah, in my mind, I was going to be a sexy mama, even though I never been a sexy woman. Like, that's not what I ever really strive to be. So that story is hard because for some reason we think that we need to have this new baby and look uber sexy to prove that we are worthy. And when we don't meet expectations, then we often can feel like we fail. So not only are you sleep deprived and most likely have some sort of postpartum depression, but now you have failed at being the best version of a mother. And it's devastating. Mm-hmm. Self-loathing sets in. You can't be present to this miracle in your arms. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. I threw in my scale the first week into being a new mom. Before that, when I was pregnant, I weighed myself every single day, wondering how much weight I was going to gain, petrified that I was going over what the doctor told me was, quote unquote, healthy. Threw that stuff away and never looked back. Haven't gotten on a scale since. When I go to the doctors, I tell them not to tell me my weight. I don't want to know. It doesn't matter. And also, who wants to bounce back? Like, the future is not about bouncing back. I want to bounce forward. And so the concept around bouncing back is just, in my opinion, so toxic and so devastating and so normalized. Mm-hmm. Most women think that's just a normal thing.
Yeah. And so you're also a dancer and you taught dance. And I've heard you talk about both dancing and your photography as medicinal. So not merely as a form of artistic expression, but as something that is alchemy too, in some way. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I say medicinal / therapeutic. Mm-hmm. Having been a massage therapist for so long, I just deeply believe in the therapeutic nature of art and touch. And dancing for me was therapeutic because when I was 16, I was told that I'll never be a professional dancer. I was told by many different people that my body wasn't right, even though I didn't want to be a professional dancer. I just wanted to dance. Mm-hmm. But as soon as someone told me that I would never be that, it started to kill it for me. It started to kill the joy of dancing, as if my body shape was the reason for me dancing. And I went to a West African dance class, and they were like, "Welcome! Bring that body to the dance floor!" And I was like, okay, I can dance now. Just how I am. Without needing to be a superstar, but just needing to find joy. So West African dance was a huge influence in my joy and being able to dance for the joy of it, not for the exercise of it, but the simple magic, the medicine of moving to drums and with people that want to scream with you. And with photography, the reason I called it medicinal and therapeutic, once I did that self-portrait, I wouldn't have called it before because I was Photoshopping. I was showing the best angle. I wasn't aware that I wasn't including a diverse voice at all. I wasn't even aware. It was so normalized. Mm-hmm. I say therapeutic because I will not Photoshop a photograph anymore. I want it to be a truthful representation of where we are at. And I want to help women that I work with be able to look at it truthfully, no filters. No Photoshop. Not that those are bad things. These are just my takes on it. And see the gorgeousness, the masterpiece that it is in its truthfulness without needing to hide or tuck or snip or change anything about it. And we can see the reality, the truthfulness of something. Then we can let go of this idea that we need to hide it. And that's really relaxing. It can be really, really relaxing.
So I know you also, in addition to doing, you travel, right? You travel from place to place to photograph people. And I know that you also had spent some time photographing refugees, Syrian refugees. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that experience.
I do. In order to survive as my type of photographer, you have to draw from a pretty large audience. It's very different style. It's not family portraiture. It's not senior portraits. It's not a typical business model. So I need to travel as much as possible. Though, to be honest, I'm a Cancer. I like to be home. Traveling isn't really my jam. But I'm grateful that I can go to these cities and have work and people that want to work with me. I mean, it's a dream. It's hard, but it's a dream. And I had this opportunity to go to Greece. Oh gosh, I think that was 2 years ago now, to photograph. Our intention was to photograph mother refugees from Syria. I went with these three women that were bloggers and another photographer. And we went there with that intention, but it ended up just being people in general, photographing people in general, hearing stories, trying to use our media platforms as a way to share as many stories as we could, basically. So while it was an honor to go and photograph these people with the most horrific stories I've ever heard, I have to be honest that I left feeling worse. While I was there, I started to just realize how, yes, I was going to be able to provide some stories and raise awareness, which I did. I got a lot of traction and it was beautiful, but really just, it made me realize how little I can do and how I get to go home to a bed. And it made me question why do I get to? And those are hard questions for me. I don't understand. Different people have different takes. I realized that I didn't have a lot to offer and that it felt like I was taking advantage of the situation almost. So I had to reflect upon that a lot. And then after that, photographing bodies seemed really insignificant. I was like, body image issues, whatever. There's all kinds of such gnarly stories going on. And I worked through that and then came to the place of we all are working on stuff. It's all intense. There's so many intense things. This life is, I like to say, a beautiful mess. And all of our pain is valuable, and it's no less or more But it's important to listen and to be aware of others and listen to their stories. And for me, that really helps me get out of my own head and want to deeply be of service in how others might need me because of my privilege, because my life is so easy, because I understand depression and suffering. And I just want to be of service to those broader voices beyond body image. And the work that I do with body image is in body liberation, as Jess Baker likes to say, is also monumental. That's freedom so that we can do better things with our time. And when I say better, I mean more powerful impact and freedom from thinking that we're not worthy, and instead stepping into the worthiness, even if moments at a time, and doing rad work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, there's that really wonderful quote. I'm trying to remember. It's like a Naomi Wolf quote, but it's basically about, I'm not going to remember the full quote, but maybe I'll find it later. But the quote is about how women, basically how a group of people that is constantly distracted by some ideal of beauty that they are supposed to be fitting and that they aren't fitting is a population that will be more submissive. So it's like, if right, that it's not just about beauty, but it's about the obsession with beauty that means that women can't self-express, which sounds like what you're talking
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. How can we be fully expressive and feel powerful if we feel ugly and gross? Well, it's hard to do both. And we can do them in different ways. I still struggle with feeling gross, but then I have so many tools now that I can stand up, shake that off, and get to work. And but it's an everyday practice. But I refuse to be told that I'm not worthy of that. But to be rebellious in that way is a lot of work. It's a lot, and it's Yeah, for me, when I see the women and behind it, for me, when I look at women in front of my lens, I normally always get teary, if not sob, because it's like as if everything else has stopped, all the stories, all the BS, and I see this magical being, and we're making these photos, and both of us typically can feel it in that moment. We're both getting high and, oh my God, we're powerful. Oh my God. You know, because we're channeling this energy, right? And then that photo shoot stops and you get in your car and life, you know, and to remember that moment of like, oh my God, I'm so amazing. We have to keep coming back to that. It's not going to stick. Right. We've been told that we need to be one way and to constantly strive to change. So to feel that is essential to being a wild woman, unapologetic. And that's my goal every day, if even only to feel it for a minute, to remind myself the wild woman I've recently been re-listening to, Women Who Run With the Wolves.
Such a great book. Such a great book.
I'm so back into it. Yes, yes, yes. The wild woman and the waves of it.
Mm-hmm. And do you see, you know, with the, there's so much that has happened really over much longer, but in an intense way, right, over the last year or so with the Me Too movement. And does it seem like things are shifting to you?
Does it seem like things are shifting? That is the golden nugget question. Here's what I do know. When I first started this work, I had hundreds and hundreds of trolls. And when I say trolls, I mean like on social media, people commenting about how disgusting my photos were and who wants to see this. And I can't remember the last troll I've had. I can't remember.
Well,
I've weeded out a lot of them, but there's still opportunity for lots more. Everything I share is super duper public. And so in that context, I've thought about that a lot. Obviously, people are getting more accustomed. It's getting more normalized to see diversity, to see women breaking the rules of what it means to share ourselves online and what we call beautiful. what we call powerful, owning it. So that, I think, is change. I think we have a long way to go. And how exciting that we're on the path. Me too. Oh my God. It opened up all these wounds from myself that I had forgotten about, that I normalized.
Right.
And oh, to feel that power game, like, that's right. That's not going to happen again. Woof. I didn't even know. I had all these layers that we get to rip off, peel off, slither out of, and share with each other. And that's where I love social media. Social media has a lot of downfalls, but in this case, I think it's so wonderful that we can share our stories that remind us of our own power. And I like to see things as spirals, and I see that as a spiral. When I can own something and remember, then it allows someone else to, and it gives permission to someone else to remember. And it's, I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're on the way. We got lots of work to do, but I'm excited about that work. It's going to be hard. It is hard. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I definitely see when I photograph, women's stories are changing when they arrive to my studio. They're still nervous and all this, but they're not as petrified. So yeah, it is changing.
Who are some women either that you know or that are in the world, other artists or other people from other disciplines who are kind of like bookmarks that are constant sources of inspiration for you?
So I think it's pivotal. It's essential to have constant inspiration. It's essential for me to curate my social media feeds with what I want to see. And we have that power. Might take a minute to do, but we got that power. And number one for me is my dear friend, Jess Baker. She's helped me see things so differently. I think her brain is one of the most brilliant brains I know when it comes to body image and the history of it. And I've read both of her books like 5 times, and huge influence. And Sonia Renee Taylor is number one as well. These are all number ones.
they share it. They share that slot.
Right.
And also, oh gosh, there's so many, but I would say those two are the ones that I look for the most for inspiration, insight. And so many new budding photographers coming out with such wonderful, from their view, from gender roles, from bodies. It's just the spiral again is widening. And it seems like every week on social media, I find a new photographer that's doing revolutionary, rebellious work with bodies and gender. And it's... delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just so for people who don't know, Jess Baker writes the Militant Baker blog, and Sonia Renee Taylor is the founder of The Body Is Not an Apology. And they both were at the conference that Jess organized, the Body Love Conference, years ago. And you presented at that too, did you?
I did. Yeah. I did present that. And Sonia Renee Taylor just came out with a new book too. That's absolutely delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, the cover is gorgeous too. Yeah. She's like lying in bed of rose petals or something.
Jump in there with her. Oh my gosh.
So good. So one question I have is, you're talking now, or you're working on a project about elders.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Oh yes.
And it seems to me that this is true, I think, also for men, but particularly for women, that there's still a perception that we have expiration dates, and once we reach a certain age, we're no longer beautiful, but we're also no longer interesting. There's a way in which older women, or even middle-aged women, can begin to become invisible. So I'm curious about this work with elders, about your impetus to do it and the potential that you think it has, both for the people being photographed, but also for us to see these images of aging bodies.
Absolutely. I love what you said there. We think we have an expiration date. I never heard that before. That's a really good way to put it. Because yeah, women and men, but the women that I work with, they do. I mean, at a certain age, they don't want to say their age anymore. As if it's a shameful thing to be 50 or 60 or 70 or 80. As if it's a shameful thing to have the privilege of growing wise and elder. I just, I don't understand how we have brainwashed people into believing this lie. And yeah, pretty much every woman I have photographed, with the exception so far of one, Carmeline, for my Elder series, feel invisible. That is the word that they use. Every one of them. Whether it's walking in the supermarket and, you know, that person doesn't hold the door for them, or whatever it is. Not being told they're beautiful anymore by anybody in their life. But the book that I made, The Bodies of Mothers, was a selfish endeavor. I needed it for myself. And consequently, other people needed it too. And same with this Body of Elders project, which I hope to find a publisher for. I'm not sure if I ever want to do self-funding or self-publishing again. But I'm doing it for selfish reasons. I need guidance. I need a map. I need inspiration. I need rebels to help me into elderhood. Because I don't want to believe in like the birth story of bouncing back. I don't want to believe that it's shameful to become an elder. I want to see these beautiful bodies praised and these people breaking the rules that to be a naked body and an elder body in a photograph is nothing but magnificent. When we see in movies and you know, elder bodies naked, it's always in a joke matter, pretty much. It's always joking, and it's always like, ew, who wants to see that? And I want to see it. I want to see a whole bunch of it, actually.
I want to see it, too.
Endless versions of it. And I guess the same thing with people used to say with, you know, this body diversity. Who wants to see that? Well, a whole bunch of us do. That's who. And, oh, I dream of finding a publisher or however this is going to happen and photographing this time much better diversity. That's one thing I didn't love about my first book. I didn't have the money to travel. I want to travel and photograph as many worldwide stories from different communities of elders. Because in some cultures, being an elder is a prized, hugely respected, revered privilege. When I traveled to West Africa, it's such a different story than we have here. It's people are proud to say their age, at least in the communities that I visited. And so that's, oh gosh, how I want to thumb through this beautiful book of images of all these brave and gorgeous elders and take it in and feel as I grow to be an elder, if I have the privilege to become an elder, feeling more and more delicious in my skin with every day. And, you know, a lot of elders will tell me, I love your work, but I would never do that.
Mm-hmm. What's a challenge for you? They don't realize that that's a challenge. Yeah.
You know, and what I hear is, oh, I love that, but ew.
So you said initially elders say they would never do that, but does that attitude change sometimes once you...
Well, it depends on the elder, for sure. Yeah. It's like family friends, you know, or my mom's friends will see it and be like, oh, I love what you're doing. Ha ha ha. Kind of uncomfortable, you know, but which is normal. We've all been brainwashed to believe that that's quote unquote gross. And it's going to take a lot of rebellious elders to change that, which is going to happen. I can't wait. Like I say, I hope I'm privileged to become an elder, but when I do, oh, my body's going to be everywhere. Mm-hmm. And, I'm so excited. I'm so thrilled about this project. Like this, I feel like is going to be my greatest work and my offering to this planet before I leave. Yeah, I basically every day get giddy about it. I still don't know how it's going to happen, but it's going to happen. And I was just recently featured in this mini, they call mini documentaries by AARP. About this series, and it's just so beautiful. Everyone that watches it cries because it's changing the way we think. And when we can change the way we think, we realize what we've been missing out on, and it's really beautiful.
I think there's also something about like an American, and it's not exclusively American, but squeamishness with nudity.
Yes. Oh yes. Oh yes.
And to me that feels also deeply intertwined with misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think about, I know you've taken like a lot of your really beautiful images of mothers are of mothers breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. And that's still unbelievably such a controversial thing, right? As women breastfeeding in public and
women are being told to cover up. Meanwhile, we have that. We have the media that is constantly exploiting women's bodies in a sexual way. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, maybe you could talk about your photos of breastfeeding women, or talk about nudity in relationship to a shift, a cultural shift.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Nudity is, that's where a lot of people like to, oh, you're the nude photographer. Ha ha ha. Slightly uncomfortable, slightly curious. and to me, nudity is not nude. That's uninterrupted skin. That is a body with no lines distracting me from the perfection of the miracle, which is a flipping body. And no one questions a 20-year-old photo of a Victoria's Secret model almost naked. That's so normal, but yet that's pretty much nudity. That's normal, though. We don't think twice about that. But post anything outside of that scope, and it's like all of a sudden, what's that? To me, it's a beautiful body. And I also, misogyny and also religion. And I grew up in a Catholic village in Mexico. I wore underwear in my shower until I was 13 because I didn't want to see my stuff, because my stuff was bad. My stuff is bad stuff. So again, like connecting with that, oh, wait. My vagina isn't bad. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I can actually look at it too? Yes. And, oh my gosh. Yeah, in other cultures, there's, you know, European cultures where co-ed bathhouses and nude are just normal. It's all how we've been trained to believe. It's all agreements that we've made of what isn't appropriate or appropriate. As far as breastfeeding, well, yeah, we know what breasts are for. Selling burgers and cars and attracting your men or feeling sexy. That is the normalized concept of a breast. So when you have a breast out feeding a baby, oh my gosh, what is she doing? Calling attention to herself. Who does she think she is? Oh my gosh, that's a nipple. And it, again, it's breaking the rules. So when we break the rules, people get upset. And but wait, breasts are for sex, not for feeding a two-year-old. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons I love breastfeeding photography. But I didn't love breastfeeding photography until I became a mom. I had no idea. I didn't know it was a big thing because I never did it before. Nor did I know how beautiful it is until I became a mother, because your baby is silent.
Which is a plus. In addition to being fed. Yeah.
And especially in a photo shoot, everything calms down. Typically, if the mom if the baby's still young, the other breast will drip milk. And that's where I just start to lose my stuff, because I'm like, oh my God, the goddess is like pouring this liquid gold out of her breasts. And I mean, it to me, it's magical. And I even forget that they're breasts. I'm able to see them as this glorious body. And yeah. And to think that this woman is just sitting there getting photographed by me while her body is making milk and feeding, and she's sitting there talking to me. I mean, that's where, if we can take off the filters and realize how magical this moment is in these bodies, the rest is fluff. Mm-hmm. But it's, again, it's a daily, sometimes hourly, sometimes minute by minute practice.
Mm-hmm. And you've been... Like, you often get kicked off of Facebook or...
I'm kicked off right now.
You are?
Oh, yeah.
For just having a photograph with a nipple, or yeah. Is it...
Mm-hmm. Back when I first started getting banned, it was a big deal. And back then, you could not post a photo of breast, period. And then enough of us, you know, took to writing articles and getting big features and big magazines and all different kinds of media outlets, that Facebook finally changed their rules that if a woman was breastfeeding, then the other nipple could be exposed. So that changed the rules. I still get banned, but I had an in at Facebook and she would restore my account. Lots of years had passed and I wasn't getting banned, but I think there's a new algorithm or something. Mm-hmm. I've been getting banned. I was just back from a ban and I got banned 2 days later. And I'm so done fighting Facebook that I just let it be now. But I think I know it's a mistake. It's something that's happening. And on Instagram, they just delete my photos, which is annoying. But it is what it is for now. And people are still fighting to normalize that because, again, like, it's just, I get banned for a photo of a breastfeeding woman, yet we just put into power a man that was accused of sexual harassment. Like, it's just, oh, and one of the things is that they tell me I'm violating community standards. That's the word that they use, violating. I'm violating something by posting an image of a woman breastfeeding a baby. But all these other things are going on, and it's just interesting what we choose to see as offensive to me.
Yeah, because that word, it has the same root as violence, right? So the idea of violating.
With a nipple.
With a nipple, mm-hmm. and with showing a mother caring for her child.
Mm-hmm. If that isn't misogyny, right. What is? That's because then I can post a photo of any guy photo I take of, bare-chested, and it's just so silly when we think about it. It's just all silly agreements. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that word violating definitely gets me every time I see it when I get banned. Mm-hmm. Not to take it personally, I'm not a bad person. I'm and I'm going to keep on going.
Yeah. I'm wondering what it is like to raise a son in this culture.
Woo! Get back to you in 20 years.
Yeah.
I always thought I was going to have a daughter. And when I found out that I was pregnant with a son, I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I don't know anything about boys except that most of my life I've hated them. With the exception of very few. So what a magnificent opportunity for me to heal my wounds with men and boys. And yeah, to be real, my son has grown up around naked people and bodies, and my house is full of body diversity and breastfeeding. And he just said the other day, he's like, Mama, can I have a photo shoot, but not naked? And we talk about bodies all the time. And he recently told me that he felt like he was fat and he wanted to be skinny. I asked him, why do you want to be skinny? He said, because then I'm strong. And I had to dig deep. I was like, how do I respond to this? I'm so angry.
Right.
So how am I going to raise this boy? Day by day and with as much guidance as possible and as much real talk as possible. I talk about my body all the time. I ask him, what do you think about Mama's body? What does it look like to you? And he's told me, he's like, I think you're fat. I was like, awesome. What does that mean to you? What does being fat mean to you? I don't know. Is it good or bad? Well, I don't know. It's this conversation that I want to keep on having of how for him to honor his own body, but how he sees me in my body. And I tell him all the time how much I love my body. I grab my rolls and I dance around the house. And I'm like, oh, I love this body. I love this body. And I use really, really mindful language. And I tell him how beautiful he is and how strong he is. No matter his shape, he's going to be as strong as he possibly can be. And so far, most of his closest friends are girls, which just thrills me because he's a soft boy, and he identifies as a boy. We've had that conversation too. And I love how soft he is and how he wants to play house with these girls. And I don't know, girl. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do my very, very best.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Raise this boy in this confused humanity. Basically, I want him to feel powerful and in deep respect of those that he loves, and mindful of his own language.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have one more question.
Yay.
Which is, well, it's actually kind of a two-part question. One is, I'm curious where you learned, and this could be from people, it could be from magazines, it could be where you learned about femininity, or about what it meant to be a woman. Mm-hmm. And those could be very disparate. Like, you could have a range of experiences. I'm sure. I know I do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My first thought was Cinderella.
Yeah.
My favorite, The Little Mermaid. Like, that's what I wanted to be. That's what I thought was the definition, to be this gorgeous princess that finds a man and lives happily ever after. And that really messed with my brain. I was so boy obsessed and still am to a certain degree. Like, I feel like that is the goal. So I have to work with that every single day. I think the first woman that really helped me was my Auntie Desiree. She lived with us my sophomore year of high school. And she just would walk around naked and take baths. And I just saw she had dreadlocks and she was, you know, had hairy armpits. And she just was so comfortable and at peace in her body. And I really noticed that because most people around me were really uncomfortable talking about how fat they were, talking about their varicose veins, talking about their wrinkles, talking about that. And Desiree just so at ease. And it was noticeable. That was my first hit. Being a woman, I'm still learning. I know I rejected the idea of being sexy. I rejected that everyone would comment on my looks and my body. I always focused on what I look like as a woman, and very, very few true role models as a younger person. I think younger people now have a more wide spectrum of what it means to be a woman in all these different ways we show up. But now, the women that are closest to me, they are my role models, what it means to be a woman. And the more at peace I get with my own self and I can feel that softness and also make balance with my, I'm also very masculine. And that's a great question. I want to think about that one some more.
Mm-hmm. And what is something that you're most proud of in terms of the way that you've evolved your attitudes or your relationship to the feminine part of yourself?
Well, when I was a teenager, I couldn't look in the mirror. When I was in my 20s, I could kind of look in the mirror, but I still felt like a gross troll. I don't know if I felt feminine or whatever. I was with this partner that was 20 years older than me, and I lived in the middle of nowhere. It was like I was hiding out from the world. And so I am proud of who I am today, even though I have more work to do. That's going to be my life. It's a lifetime of beautiful work. But I'm proud that I've made it. I've made it through harassment. I've made it through sexual abuse. I've made it through self-loathing. I made it through so much, and I am a woman. Now I can look at my vagina and love it. Going from being afraid of myself to, like, hey, pleasuring myself, giving myself permission. This morning I was doing some movement and I had my hands on my body and I just, oh, I'm so proud of you. You're still here. And yeah, oof. I do love being this woman. I really, really do. I'm proud that I'm still here.
I want to thank Jade Beale for sharing her words and her work with us, and songwriter Jillian Bissett, whose voice you hear at the beginning of our episode. After the recording of this interview, Jade received word from AARP that they would not be airing the completed mini-documentary about her Bodies of Elders project. Although the documentary had support from those involved in its creation, Jade was told that higher-ups deemed it too risky. She says she's more committed than ever before to photographing and transforming attitudes about the bodies of elders. I'm Lisa O'Neill. Thanks so much for joining us and listening to The Matriarchitects. You can subscribe to get new episodes delivered to your listening platform, and you can support the project by sharing this episode, leaving a review, or finding The Matriarchitects on Patreon. Let's continue to build a world where people of all genders can live their fullest, most purposeful lives. See you next time.